Spring is in the air, and it's the season for growth and new experiences in your career. Explore the country with rewarding travel assignments through Arias Medical Group. Know a PT? Make a referral and earn up to $1,000. To learn more, call 1-800-340-2619 or visit ariusmedical.com. That's AURUSmedical.com.
This is the PT Pinecast. A podcast that talks about physical therapy over beer. Bringing together clinicians, researchers, and forward-thinking PTs in a show that's anything but boring.
Let there be beer!
This is the PT Pinecast with your host, Jimmy McKay.
So I want you to introduce yourself to the audience.
Okay. My name is Jackie Price, and I have cystic fibrosis, and I received a double lung transplant in June of last year.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
Tell me about you.
I like to enjoy time with my friends. I feel like I'm the goofy one of the group. I like to go shopping a lot, too much.
So the first question on my show is always the hardest. What are you drinking?
I am drinking a chocolate milkshake.
Yeah.
By the way, let me take a sip of that.
I'm doing a similar route in that I went a milkshake, but I'm doing Oreo. Can't go wrong with Oreo.
Mm-mm.
So I appreciate you being open to telling your story, because I've been following along because you're friends with my roommate and former classmate, Amber. So take me through it. What's it like having cystic fibrosis?
Pretty much most of my life, it didn't really affect too much. I mean, I always had to do like treatments and things like that. Chest PTs, 30 minutes twice a day. And then if you're sick, you have to do it more often. And then nebulizer treatments, I had 2 to 3 to do along with my chest PTs.
Per day?
Well, twice a day. I mean, I take a lot of pills, and I have to take digestive enzymes anytime I eat, but the pills are the easy part of everything.
Sure.
But growing up, my parents like pretty much treated me like I was a normal kid. So I played soccer growing up and like snuck out of the house in high school and did all that stuff.
Might be listening to this.
So she knows I snuck. She knows I snuck out. Yeah. She told me that every time she would see my window, the screen of my window, like sitting next to the side of the house, she knew that I had, my house is one story, so it was pretty easy.
Gotcha. When were you diagnosed? When did your parents find out you had cystic fibrosis?
My intestines ruptured in utero, so I was born and immediately went into emergency surgery.
Wow.
They pretty much knew right away, although I hadn't been like tested officially yet. DIOS, and it's a symptom of cystic fibrosis. So, but I was diagnosed officially probably at like a day or two old. So
that doesn't always happen.
My mom had heard that the symptom was salty skin, because that is one. It's where like your body excretes more salt when you sweat and things like that. And she licked me before they got tested. I guess when they mentioned the possibility of having CF, she, I guess maybe like licked my hand or something. And then she licked my dad and was like, I know she has it. But I was in the hospital for like the first 3 months of my life from the surgery.
So besides your mom licking you every once in a while, assuming, how did CF affect you?
Mainly when I was younger, I had intestinal issues. My lungs weren't as big of an issue. CF affects your entire body, so it affects the sinuses, the lungs, and the digestive system mostly. So basically, your body doesn't absorb nutrients properly because your pancreas can't produce the pancreatic enzymes, so you take them by mouth when you eat instead, but it's not like as effective as like normal human who has like the whole pancreas thing working. So then it also causes sticky mucus in the whole body, basically. So in the digestive tract, it's lined with sticky mucus sometimes. And then also part of CF is salt deficiency, which causes you to dehydrate much faster than normal.
Thus the licking.
Yeah. And so your intestines gets dried out, and then you get intestinal blockages. And most of the time they have to be treated like in a hospital because they're too severe to pass at home. So when I was younger, I mainly dealt with blockages a lot. I had surgery at age 12. Well, I had surgery at birth from the intestinal rupture, and then they took out part of my intestines. And then at 3 months, I had another surgery where they took out more intestine. And then I had surgery at 6 where they took out, it's like adhesions basically from scar tissue. So at 6, they took out another piece. And then at 12, I went to Johns Hopkins, and they didn't take out any intestines, but he basically like took all of my intestines lungs out of my stomach and like squeeze them out and then replace them in a manner that he thought would like help. And I actually
renovated a little feng shui.
Yeah, exactly. And I've actually only had like 3 blockages or 4 blockages since age 12 after that surgery.
You talk about this so matter-of-factly. I mean, I'm guessing that's because you've been talking about your health because it comes up your whole life.
Yeah, everyone who like meets me for the first time, I'll try to tell them what I need or like medication or how to do things, and they were like, you don't need us, you know exactly what you're doing. And I know like all my medication names and like pretty much the dosage just like from being around it so much and stuff. So
you got it down.
Yeah.
What's physical therapy like? We practice in PT school, you know, chest PT, but there's no way we're doing it right because we have no idea what we're doing in PT school at the time. What is that like? I feel like you're the perfect person to ask because I could ask a PT who's been doing it for 50 years.
Yeah.
But they don't know unless they've received it. And you could probably tell the difference between a PT who knows what they're doing and a PT who doesn't know what they're doing.
I had the manual chest PT probably up until I was like 12, and then they came out with the vest.
The vibrating vest.
Yep. So that's mainly what I use. Spare my mom the headache of having to give me chest PT. So
she was taught how to do it too.
Yeah. So she did it, but I never really think it bothered me. I never thought it hurt or tried to fight it or anything like that. I always let her do it.
How often are you using that still?
Now, after my transplant, I don't have to use it at all.
Right.
Because my lungs no longer have CF.
It's a big deal.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen the One Republic music video?
I have.
My life?
After I had my transplant, one of my nurses was like, you need to get up and walk more. Like, because at first, I couldn't walk at all. And then towards the end, they wanted me to walk like 3 or 4 times a day. But surprisingly enough, it's hard to walk that many times a day. Even though you're just in a hospital room, you always have things going on or whatever. So she would make it a point to come in and we would play music while I was walking the halls, and that was one of the songs I walked to. And there were some people that were in the hospital on the same floor as me who were asking the nurses like, who's that playing music out there? So yeah, I've seen that one.
Yeah, it tells a great story, the music video anyway.
Yeah, I've seen the music video in the song.
It tells a story of a young boy with CF, and he doesn't really let anything hold him back.
Yeah.
Playing hockey, cycling, he's kind of doing everything a kid his age would do. That's still got to be hard. I mean, it's a great inspiring music video, but this is life. That's got to be really, really difficult to want to do the things that you want to do when you have the pills you have to take and the treatments you have to do. And how do you stay motivated?
I guess you stay motivated because if you don't do it, your health will decline rapidly. So that's a big one. If you're not compliant with your treatments growing up and into your adulthood, they won't give you a transplant if you're like needing one, because they say like, you got to be compliant in order for us to like give someone's lungs to you.
It's a pretty big gift.
Yeah. Basically, one time I was in high school, I had a little bit of a rebellious stage when I was a junior in high school.
Besides just sneaking out?
Yeah, besides just sneaking out, I just was like, screw this disease, and basically like didn't take very good care of myself. I did what I need to for the immediate effects, like take my enzymes and things, because you notice that stuff if you don't do it, like your stomach hurts and stuff. But the lung therapy, you don't really notice until like weeks later that like you haven't really been doing it.
Slacking.
Yeah. My aunt, when I was in the hospital during that period of time, I was in the hospital for 3 weeks, and she basically showed me a pie chart that said, here's CF if you do your treatments, and it was just a little sliver of your entire life. And then it was, here's CF if you don't do your treatments, and it was like a quarter of the pie. So basically, she was saying, like, if you do your treatments, it's only an hour a day, but if you don't do your treatments, here you are in the hospital, not able to do anything with your friends at all.
That's a great way to paint that your aunt did.
It's hard.
But it's still hard to do it every day.
Yeah.
It's a pain.
It was a pain, and I honestly hated every time I had to do it. And sometimes I would just be like, screw it, I'm too tired. Or if my friends were doing something like going to brunch on a Saturday morning, I didn't want to wake up like an hour early.
Yeah.
I would just like have a couple skip days. But I mean, your doctors know, like, there's nobody that does it 7 days a week, twice a day. I mean, realistically, they'd want you to do it like 3-4 times a day. But when do you do it? If you work 8 to 5,
right,
you really don't have the time in the middle of the day. It's not something, I mean, maybe one day they can make it smaller, but it's not something you can easily like just carry around with you either. So the machine is like decent size.
Which one, the nebulizer?
The vest. The nebulizers are small. Those would be easy to take with you, but...
Where were you when you started to know I needed a transplant? It's got to be soon.
Actually, my transplant was an emergency, and it was not planned at all. I mean, I knew my lungs were starting to get weaker, and, like, I was coughing all the time when I would go out with my friends, and, like, I mean, I would hate to walk 100 feet, basically, so... But
I had played soccer before.
Yeah.
So 100 feet?
Yeah,
I mean,
nothing.
You used to sprint
I was midfield, so I, like, ran up and down.
All day.
Yeah. I even ran it under 7 minutes. a mile one time. I'm so proud of that.
That's fast.
And my doctor had mentioned, like, possibly, like, doing a couple tests. We didn't think it was going to be any time, like, soon. And I was still working full-time.
What kind of work do you do?
I am a treasury. I'm still employed. And I'm just on disability, but I'm a treasury analyst.
That's good.
Yeah.
So then walk us through it. What was it like when that emergency actually happened? You knew it had to go down.
June 10th, I had sinus surgery. They put in stents in my nose, and I had, like, coughed and so much pressure that the stents actually, like, came loose, and it caused a nosebleed. And it was, like, nobody's fault, obviously. And the nosebleed was so bad that it got into my mouth, and, like, they think it dripped into my lungs. That's Friday. And then Sunday, I guess, I don't remember this. This is all I've been told from my parents. I started feeling like I was having trouble breathing, and just, like, my mom said, I kept telling her, like, I'm anxious, Mom. I don't know why. I just feel like something's not right. I don't know what it was, if I couldn't breathe or something like that, but my mom just knew something was wrong. So a doctor came in, and he, like, put me on BiPAP and CPAP machines and, like, trying to get me to breathe. And then they said I was just, like, panting, and I couldn't breathe, couldn't catch my breath. So
now, do you still remember any of this?
No, I don't remember any of this. Yeah, this is all I was told by my parents. The doctor was, like, calm. At about 5 a.m., he said, like, we have to intubate her. Like, her heart's going to give out. It's beating too fast. And then I was like, I can't make this decision without my doctor. Like, I don't even know you. I've only met you this evening. And so I called my doctor at 3 in the morning. And I was like, I need you to help me make this decision. So we talked to the other doctor on the phone. And they know each other. So he came back on the phone with me and said, like, I know him. You can trust him. Like, do as he says. He's right. So I looked at the other doctor and I was like, I'll only let you put me to sleep if you promise me that I'll wake up again. Mm. He said that he promised. And, like, around 5 a.m. they intubated me. I was intubated in a medically induced coma for a month.
Wow.
4 days later, after I was put in a medically induced coma, my lungs, like, completely failed 100%. So they put me on a machine called ECMO. It's extracorporeal something. It's like external heart and lung machine. So basically it takes your blood out of you, oxygenates it, and then puts it back in. And so I was on that, and they tried a couple times to wake me up. They didn't expect that I would get lungs for a month or so. And they said people, like, are awake on ECMO and walking around, and, like, and they said they woke me up, tried to wake me up a couple times, but I was really agitated and, like, trying to pull out the stuff. So they put me back under.
So how does it work? Now we know that you need a set of lungs.
Yeah.
A set of them, not one.
Yeah, both.
Two.
Your doctor presents a case to a board who decides if you're eligible for being listed, what your LAS score is. It's basically how high up or lower you are on a list. Okay. So the higher your LAS score, the higher the need for lungs. Honestly, because I had, like, gotten so close to, this isn't the same doctor I talked on the phone with, but another doctor I saw, pulmonologist, I saw two for a while, because I had gotten so close to her a year, for the whole year and a half before, like, normally they wouldn't give lungs to someone they didn't know because they can't, like, test to their character or anything like that. Gave me an LAS score of 88. I was the number one listed person in Northern Virginia. They still told my parents they thought it was going to be a month. And then 4 days later, they got the call that there was lungs. Yeah.
What do you know about that?
Right now, I don't know anything.
Do you ever?
I can send a letter to the family in June of this year, but they don't have to reply.
Sure.
So it's up to them.
Oh, I never knew that.
My parents got, like, a little bit of information just because my donor was considered high risk, but the doctor said, like, she would have taken the lungs if it was her or her daughter or her son. So it wasn't, like, something crazy. Anytime a donor is considered high risk in any way, they have to tell the family, like, some information. And then, so my parents accepted the lung. I got my transplant, and a nurse later told me that thank God she got the call because she wouldn't have made it another night.
The first time you heard someone say that, like, how'd that make you feel? Like, I can't even begin to imagine what that would make me feel.
I just felt very lucky and blessed because, like, to still be on here and, like, awake and alive and stuff. So I did a speech the other day, and I said my body felt the need to test the reaches of modern medicine because after the transplant, I had a lot of bleeding, really bad. So they had to open me back up and go back in and get out all the cauterized. Yeah. A couple of days after that, my lungs filled with 5 liters of fluid. So they had to do a laparoscopic surgery. And all during this, my kidneys failed. So I was, my dad said I looked like the Michelin man. I was so swollen. So
dads are so nice, aren't
they? I know, they are.
We gotta go pay some student loans. We'll be right back.
Spring is in the air. It's the season for growth and new experiences in your physical therapy career. Explore the country with healthcare staffing agency, Aureus Medical Group. You'll find rewarding travel and full-time career opportunities nationwide. Know a PT? Make a referral and earn up to $1,000. To speak with a recruiter, call 1-800-340-2619 or visit aureusmedical.com. That's A-U-R-E-U-S medical.com. Effective clinical practice is grounded in effective research.
And that is what the Foundation for Physical Therapy does.
For over 35 years now, the Foundation for Physical Therapy has made it its mission to fund and publicize physical therapy research. Their researchers have helped introduce movement in babies with cerebral palsy,
integrate dancing to alleviate ailments in patients with Parkinson's,
and develop video games to implement physical rehabilitation. The work of their recipients would not be possible without the support of donors like you.
Your support can help us continue to elevate the physical therapy profession
and work towards creating a world
that thrives on mobility.
You have the power to make a difference.
Join the power of one
and contribute today at foundationforpt.org.
That's foundation, the number 4, pt.org.
Donate today and experience the power of one for the Foundation for Physical Therapy.
Online at foundation, the number 4, pt.org.
Let's give a nice, warm welcome to...
We're back. It's so great to see you. Let's get back to the show now. Back to the second half of our interview with Jackie Price. Jackie, living with cystic fibrosis, and recently underwent a double lung transplant. More from Jackie here.
How long from transplant were you able to get up and walk?
I was woken up 2 weeks after my transplant.
Wow.
I couldn't move, literally. I was swollen, I had neuropathy in my feet, and I had lost pretty much all my muscle mass. Not that I had a lot before transplant. I woke up, all I could do was lift my one finger, basically. So
what goes through your head then?
This is hell.
Yeah.
That's literally what I said.
And that's coming from someone who's been dealing with medical issues their entire life.
It was I would never wish what I went through on my worst enemy. I did ask why a lot, and eventually my dad said, you're never going to get your answer, so it's not worth asking why.
Yeah.
It took about 2 months for me to be able to walk comfortably, not even comfortably, with a walker, but not feeling like I could only take 3 steps. So it was the first time I walked was just from the chair in my room to the end of the bed. And then we would go in the hallway and walk 20 feet, and then we'd walk a little further and a little further.
When your PT would show up and knock on the door, were you happy and excited they showed up, or not really?
It depended on the day I was having. Some days I was one of them to be there. I felt super motivated. I wanted to get up. I wanted to walk. And other days I was can we just do stretches in the bed? I feel too weak or tired to get up and do anything.
That's good to hear, because I think PTs need to remember that maybe the patient really does want to move, mm-hmm. but maybe they just don't have it in them.
Yeah.
They don't got it.
Can't do it.
Yeah.
I remember they made me use the Hoyer lift to get me into the chair, and I hated the Hoyer lift.
Why?
I don't know. I just hated it. I had a trach for 3 months after my transplant, and I was on the ventilator for probably 2 of those months. It was just uncomfortable to be in the ventilator and then hanging in the air. And I was I'd rather dangle on the bed. That's what we called it. You sit on the side of the bed without any back support. And I was I'd rather do that than have to go in the Hoyer lift.
Yeah.
Eventually I was you know what? I'm going to try to stand pivot to the chair. They had only 3 people in there. At this time, I weighed almost 200 pounds just in fluid. So,
wow. How tall are you? I'm just trying to
I'm 5'7".
Wow.
So they only had 3 people. And I was I think you're going to need to get a few more people in here. Because at this point, I still really didn't have leg strength to walk or anything. And he's no, we don't need that many people. And I did it with just 3 people.
Nice.
And then after that day, it made me feel really confident, more confident. And then they would have me stand by pulling a sheet under me, under my bottom, and then help lift me to stand. And then I would stand for 20 seconds, and then my legs would just, I was about to fall. But then one day I was I want to take a step. I don't know what was in me. And I took 1 step, and then you take another step and just keep going. So
I guess when you take that first step, you can actually say, okay, I came back and I walked again.
Yeah.
I mean, it's 1 step, but I did 1, I could do 2.
Yep, exactly.
That's got to be a cool day.
Yeah, it was a really cool day.
After all of that.
Yeah.
Essentially going through the worst impossible day, as you describe.
Mm-hmm.
What was the rest of your PT like while you were in the hospital and then as you transitioned out? Because now we're walking around, you know, the D.C. area having milkshakes.
Yeah. So the rest of my physical therapy, we did a lot of muscle strengthening exercises. So a lot of just like on the ground, just like lifting your toes up kind of thing. And like,
you had to do it all again.
Yeah. Doing leg lifts with just marching, things like that to help get my strength back. Arm exercises and stretches, because I also work with OT. So PT would come one day, OT would come the other. But they kind of did a lot of this. They actually did a lot of similar stuff with me. So I did a lot of those type of exercises at first, and then it was walking the hallway with the walker. I actually went to Mount Vernon Rehab, ANOVA Mount Vernon Rehab, for a week and a half after I got out of the hospital. There, they really worked on like doing a lot of strengthening with weights and things like that, walking, practicing walking without the walker and just holding onto someone's shoulder, balance stuff. I walked using those parallel bars and like walking backwards, which I never realized that how many muscles it takes to walk backwards.
Yeah.
So a lot of that stuff. And then when I went home, I did in-home physical therapy. So that was more like laying on the bed and doing things. Honestly, I realize in-home physical therapy is really good for most people, but I think for me, it's better to go somewhere because there's a lot of equipment.
Right.
And at home, it's just not the same as like having like all this equipment that you can use.
Heavy things.
Yeah. And like they had like the big yoga balls that you would like squeeze in between your legs and all that other stuff. So after I did home therapy, and I could like walk a little bit with the walker, I started doing outpatient physical therapy. We practiced stairs, which also are never realized how hard stairs are.
Yeah.
I basically one day was just like, I'm gonna try to walk without my walker, because they were talking about getting me a cane and all this stuff. And I was at home when I did this, and I just like walked down the hallway, and I was like, I don't need the walker anymore. So I just show up to physical therapy one day, and they're like, where's your walker? I was like, oh, I decided I didn't need it anymore.
That's awesome.
Because I also feel like it was making my posture bad, because I would lean on it really and rely on it heavily. And I felt like when I was walking by myself, I stood up straighter and had to hold myself up. So
yeah, because you decided to do it, you did it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Where are you now? We just walked down the street.
Yeah.
You know, what are you doing now? And then how would you describe yourself versus yourself 3-6 months ago?
So I actually had a hip infection about a month ago. So I had to get surgery on my hip, my left hip. Been unable to go to the gym. But before that, I was working out with a friend of ours. We would do like squats. I would do the TRX.
There we go.
And then I would ride the regular Schwinn Air 9, bicep curls, and then bench press with the single weights or whatever they're called.
This is making me so happy.
Also, sit to stands, which are, they make your thighs and your, they make like, they really burn your thighs.
I mean, we call them sit to stands, but really it's modified squat.
Yeah. That's one thing I learned from this whole thing is how low toilet seats are and how hard it is to get off of them when you don't have a lot of leg strength. I had like hospital chair on top of the toilet.
Sure, to make so it higher.
Yeah, to make it higher. One day also I was like, Mom, get that out of here. I can sit on this. And
good.
So, but yeah, and then you go to someone's house and you're like, gosh, your toilet's even lower than mine at my house.
Amber here sitting next to you is showing me a video on Instagram. You're just doing the sled, like NFL combine.
Yeah, I did the sled.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's actually at a gym that trains athletes for the NFL.
That's awesome.
So they're not training me like I'm going to the NFL. But
you never know. Your status is still, you could declare for the draft. You never know.
Also, when I'd work out, sometimes the guys were there working out. And so like they're bench pressing like 250 and I'm like, so it also gave me some motivation to
But they didn't have to go through what you went through.
Yeah, exactly.
Their weights are a little heavier, but their road's a little easier.
Yeah, that's true. So I'm hoping to get back to the gym. Like, I can go back 6 weeks after my surgery, so a couple weeks.
And just since we started talking about it, because you got really excited when you started talking about what exercises you were able to do.
Yeah.
You got pretty pumped when you were saying that you were doing...
I, like, hated exercise before because it made me tired. I, like, enjoyed going to the gym now. I think it's also because there was someone that held me accountable to show up. I couldn't, like, not go and just, like, not be there. But I enjoyed going and things like that. And my goal is to run 1 mile soon.
Yeah. Amber's prodding me to ask you about the Transplant Olympics.
So I would like to...
I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah, it is a thing, and it's in 2018 is the next one.
What events are we going to compete in?
I wanted to do the mile run, just to, like, prove to myself.
Where is it going
to
be?
In 2018, it's in Salt Lake City, I believe. From what I've heard, I know a girl who participated, and she actually got silver in the 100-meter dash. She told me it's really competitive, and that, like, they want you to win if you're on, like, the teams are by region. She said it was really fun, and, like, it was a cool experience, but she said it was, like, a lot more competitive than she thought it would be.
What would you want to say to the family that was ultimately responsible for giving you those lungs?
I mean, thank you, of course, but you just, like, you can't even put into words, like, how much you feel grateful towards this person. So appreciative that their family decided to donate their organs, or that they chose to be an organ donor themselves. I don't know. I think about what I would write, and I just, besides, like, thank you, and you really can't put into words, like, how you can show your gratitude. And because of that, I know people who, like, haven't written the families because they don't know what to say. Like, you can't, how do you thank someone for, like, giving you life again, basically?
Yeah, where do you start?
Yeah.
Thank you, but then
yeah.
Even if you never hear back, even if you reach out, you never hear back, hopefully, you know, your story told here and other places because you speak, it convinces some people to change that little thing on their driver's license.
Yeah. So I had one of my best friends in seventh grade. She was not an organ donor because she was led to believe that if you put that you're an organ donor, the firefighters and ambulance people won't, like, try to save you if you're in an accident, which I just think is so false. Like,
my dad was a New York City firefighter. Yeah. Trust me, they're not checking your ID when they're pulling you.
Yeah, exactly. So, but she said she's led to believe that by multiple people, and, like, but then after I got so sick, she said the moment that I got, like, the call that my lungs were ready, she said she never felt so much happiness, but also so much sadness at the same time, because she was clearly happy for her friend, but also she was sad for a family that lost their loved one. But she changed her driver's license to an organ donor.
Look at that. That's what a story like this can do, hopefully. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not...
For the first few weeks, I just cried. Like, I couldn't help it. Someone died to save my life. And then my dad told me that he said, no matter what, if you hadn't have gotten those lungs, that person, they would have passed away anyways. Yeah. That's not why they died, because you needed lung. Just think of it as their death had nothing to do with you needing lungs, and that something good came out of it.
So what are we working towards now? You got an event coming up.
I have a CODA fund, and it's...
Which stands for what?
Children's Organ Transplant Association.
Okay.
And basically, it's for anyone who has had a transplant as a child under the age of 18, or someone who had a transplant because of an illness they were diagnosed with as a child. Cystic fibrosis falls under that. So basically, it's CODA in honor of Jackie. So when you make a donation, you're making a donation to CODA, the not-for-profit, which has, obviously, its tax benefits for the donator, but also that allows them to give my family money as well on the other side.
Transplants aren't cheap.
Yeah, so they're not cheap, especially, I mean, the cost of a transplant is not cheap, and then the aftercare is actually, for me, it's been more expensive than the transplant just due to my, like, health, the health insurance that I have. But I mean, I see the doctor pretty much once a week, so there's copays for that. I have expensive medicines and stuff. So basically, when you donate to CODA, I have a fund. I submit receipts for reimbursement. So that's basically, you know, other types of fundraising organizations, they don't check where the money's going. They kind of just give it to the person. Mm-hmm. So they could say they had something wrong and they're, like, going on a trip to Hawaii or something. You never know. So CODA ensures that all the money that you submit for reimbursement is actually related to your transplant. So that could include lodging. If you have a long clinic appointment and you're there for lunch, it includes that. It includes medical copays, prescription copays, pretty much anything related to transplant. It also is available to the person for the rest of their life, and CODA does not take any percentage of the funds donated. So when you donate $100, then $100 goes to the fund.
How do people help out? If somebody was inspired by your story and just wanted to help out, how can they help you out?
So basically, you can go to CODA.org and you click search for a transplant patient or a CODA patient. You type in Jackie Price, and I'm the only Jackie Price on there. And then you can donate. And the cool thing about CODA is they also check to see if your company is a company that's already like set up with them to match your donation if you want to do that.
Good.
So, and my goal is to raise $50,000.
Wow.
I'm about halfway there.
Get out of here. Mm-hmm. Good for you.
Yeah.
Well, let's see if we can push it over the other half.
Yeah. And my family has been so appreciative of all this stuff. And then we have another event coming up on May 15th, kind of like a kickoff for the season, because pretty much the only way I've been fundraising is through Facebook. Just like I had a post, some of my friends put up, sure, like shared the post. So it's an event at a local restaurant and bar in Arlington called A-Town.
Yeah.
And
I frequented it in Peace.
And so Monday, May 15th, they're going to do a fundraiser.
Since you've been through, well, healthcare, PT specifically, most of your life, what would you say to a physical therapist who has worked with someone with CF? We call this our parting shot. So you get to give a parting shot of wisdom to all the physical therapists listening.
This is the parting shot.
Powered by Optum, Optum offers weekend courses that are Monday morning applicable, utilizing approaches that make sense.
They promote excellence in hands-on treatment, exercise prescription, pain science, and clinical reasoning, offering a COMT,
as well as an APTA-accredited fellowship in orthopedic manual therapy, both online and in-person mentoring, with locations in Houston, Dallas, and Scottsdale, Arizona. Find out more online
at OptumFellowship.com.
What's something that PT should pay attention to?
I think they should definitely listen to their patient and like how their patient's feeling, what their patient needs. And I don't know, I feel like I've had physical therapists, you just go in the first time and you're like, wow, this person's good. You know they're good.
How do you tell a difference?
Good physical therapists are very personable. They have good attitudes and they're very friendly. You can tell when the physical therapist is engaged.
Okay, phoning it in.
Yeah.
Don't phone it in.
Yeah, like it's better when they're really like there to tell you exactly what to do, help you get through it, and be very
specific. Engaged.
Yep, engaged. Yeah, that's the word. Yep.
Yeah. Well, good luck to you. You're already halfway there for raising your money, but still $25,000 is a long way to go. So we hope some people listening out there can help us out. And we'll put the link to the donate page in the bio section and the notes section of this podcast. If you're listening on iTunes, you can click that. But I appreciate you telling your story, because I think this is a perspective that we can read about, try to think we know about, but we've never lived through it. So hearing about it from someone who's done it for so long is... it's a really valuable resource, so thank you.
You're welcome. I'm always happy to share my story.
Cool. Jackie Price, appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The PT Pinecast is a product of PT Pinecast, LLC.
It is hosted and produced by PT Pinecast CEO, Jimmy McKay, and CBO, Sky Donovan from Marymount University.
We talk PT, drink beer, and record it.
This has been another pour from the PT Pinecast.
The PT Pinecast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. Our lawyers made us read that.
Podcasting. It's a great way to reach a huge audience. We're portable, free to download, and can be heard across the planet. Here on the PT Pinecast, we can paint a picture for your company to help spread your message to physical therapists across the world. With our show, we can put pictures into people's minds. Here, let me show you what I mean. Like if I push this button right here, I can take you back to the Jurassic era when T-Rex roamed the earth. And when I click on this,
I'm behind the wheel of a race car. Turning left. Shake it big, boys.
We paint pictures with sound and can paint a picture of your company on our show that'll leave an impression. To have us paint for you and spread your message to PTs across the world, contact us online at ptpinecast.com. Let's see what this button does.